Many research groups, media organizations, and others lump people together by their generation. So we talk about millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers, the greatest generation, and so on. And we talk about those generations like they mean something. But our next guest says generational labels don't really tell us much about people, and they conceal more than they explain. John Quiggin is a senior research fellow in economics at the University of Queensland in Australia. He blogs at crookedtimber.org. His recent piece in the New York Times is headlined, Millennial Means Nothing. John, welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon.
Well, in your piece, you talk about the generation game. Can you talk about what you mean by that?
Well, I mean the whole process of trying to ascribe people characteristics based on their generation, and then, of course, in the more harmless versions, write articles on how to market to people of different generations. In more pernicious versions, try and blame the whole of one generation for allegedly bad characteristics. Sometimes, for whatever, the younger generation at the time, they're lazy, entitled, narcissistic, and so forth. That's being said about the millennials now, but it was being said about the baby boomers 50 years ago. Blaming the boomers for doing all sorts of things to the economy, of course, that includes, as I mentioned in the article, Donald Trump and maybe a 60-year-old black woman who cleans his hotel for minimum wage. So we're lumping people together in a way that really makes no sense.
Where did this concept of labeling people by generations come from?
Well, I think it really started with the baby boom, which was an actual demographic event. So there really is one cohort starting just after World War II, which was much larger than the preceding one and larger also than the one that followed. So that was an actual demographic event, and the size of that generation had a bunch of big effects. But trying to treat the baby boomers born over a period of 20 years or so as a cohesive group doesn't really make very much sense. The younger ones were a lot of conscripted to the Vietnam War and so forth, but the last baby boomers were still in high school when the war ended. So we got the baby boomers, and really it's been carried on from there, popularised by people like Strauss and Howe, who put out a book on generations, named millennials, and really made a little industry out of it.
Well, is there something to it? The greatest generation, they had this shared experience of growing up through the Depression and, of course, World War II. Baby boomers, this economic boom they grew up in the United States. Millennials, many of them came out in the workforce as the economy tanked with the Great Recession. Is there something big about historical events like that that does give a common identity to a generation?
Well, it can be in certain cases, but I mean, if you take the baby boomers, it's certainly true that those born before about 1955 came into a booming economy. The subsequent half of the baby boom generation had something very different, and of course, war experiences are very different for men and for women. So, that's one of the most obvious differences that's elided by this stuff. But it's also true that throughout this time, class mattered more than when you came into the labour market. It's certainly true that coming into the labour market in a recession can be have a significant life impact, but nothing like having the right or the wrong parents.
Talking about generational labels, our guest says we put too much faith in them. John Quiggin is with us from the University of Queensland in Australia. And John, let's follow up on that point. You say class matters more than generational label. The wealth and position of your parents makes a bigger difference. Do you think that we overlook those kind of differences when we focus on generational labels?
In fact, I mean, it's often used very, very deliberately, or certainly this is the purpose, to hide those points. So if we look at articles, say, pointing out problems with the boomers and saying that we need to scale back Social Security to bring the budget into balance, that obviously hides the question of what's happened to the distribution of wealth over the last 30 years. I mean, the reason that people are doing badly isn't because one generation collectively has done exceptionally well. It's because the wealthiest 1 or 2% of the current current older generation is doing exceptionally well, and you can expect that on the whole most of their children will do the same.
We heard from a lot of people on Facebook about this already on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tom on Facebook writes that the generational labels are helpful for journalists to write generational think pieces when on a deadline. What do you think of that, John? It's an easy crutch to rely on, even if it doesn't really tell us that much.
Absolutely. I suppose I can only say there's a tiny little industry in writing denunciations of this stuff, which I've been doing for a long time. But you just see it's a very easy, lazy sort of, chin stroker type piece that you can do.
It's kind of fun to talk about, and, you know, around the office, people can bicker between the Gen Xers and baby boomers and millennials and whatever the post millennials are going to be called. Does it really do that much harm to have these labels out there?
Well, as I say, it certainly, in political discussion, it distracts from the things that really matter. And I think it just leads people, obviously, you know, there's a sense in which astrology is basically harmless. you can certainly categorise people in that way. And, of course, you know, to the extent you're tempted to believe it, remember that, you know, if you read a reasonably well-written horoscope, any horoscope, it sounds pretty good. It has a bunch of vaguely positive characteristics that you can recognise in yourself. And then if you want to draw someone else's horoscope, you can point out the vaguely negative characteristics you see in them.
In your piece, you talk about political differences within what we define as generations, and you talk about millennials and how they vote in American elections. Can you talk about that and maybe more significant labels and divisions that we should be looking at?
Well, yes, if you look at the data, it certainly shows that millennials tend to vote much more Democratic than older cohorts. And this is often ascribed to a bunch of particular experiences that millennials have, and, I mean, there's limited truth in that. But the basic fact is that millennials are less, any individual millennial is less likely to be white than somebody aged in their 60s, more likely to be urban, more likely to be educated. All of these are characteristics that are associated with that kind of voting. If you look at rural white millennials without college education, they went pretty strongly for Trump in the last election. So it's really those factors, education, race, and so forth, and class, that really drive the voting behaviour. The millennials collectively look different, but, of course, that doesn't tell you anything about any individual millennial person.
I want to get back to a point you mentioned earlier, that millennials have been described as lazy and shiftless, but so were Gen Xers and so were baby boomers. Is there just sort of a natural, maybe even human motivation to gripe about kids these days and then build maybe our sociological explanation to justify it?
Well, certainly kids these days have been going on forever. And, of course, even the so-called silent generation, when they were doing Blackboard Jungle and things like that in the 50s. Of course, we didn't have generational labels then, but they were anything but silent. The early rock and rollers were all silent. I think what we see is just cliches about young people, and, of course, it goes the other way. Baby boomers who were once lazy, shiftless, and narcissistic are now rigid and old and tired, just like the people they hoped not to be 50 years ago.
Now, you're watching this. You wrote in your piece about the United States for the most part. Is a similar sort of thing happening where you are in Australia?
Yeah, we Australia has a very similar demographic and economic history to the U.S., and, of course, we're very, very strongly influenced by U.S. trends. So we had pretty much the same baby boom, and involved in Vietnam, had very much the same economic conditions. So a derivative version of it, but we have very much the same thing here, with, I suppose, the interesting difference that the housing bubble here has never burst. So there's another theme of discussion here, which is baby boomers have all the housing wealth, which I guess isn't such a big deal in the U.S.
Talking to John Quiggin, he's talking about his New York Times piece called Millennial Means Nothing. He says generational labels, when we talk about millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers, whatever, it really doesn't tell us much about people. There are a lot more important factors, he says, we should be focusing on instead. John's a senior research fellow in economics at the University of Queensland in Australia, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there certain ideas about your generation that are out there in the culture that either bug you or you think are actually pretty fair that do describe you and your age cohort? Do you think we overuse these labels, as our guest says, a millennials, Generation X, and think that they actually explain something about people? What do you think about the idea of labeling people by generation? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We're talking to John Quiggin. He's a senior research fellow in economics at the University of Queensland in Australia. We're talking about his recent piece in the New York Times headlined Millennial Means Nothing. He makes the case there that we use these generational labels like millennial or baby boomer a lot, and they don't really tell us much about actual people and the way they behave. There are more important differences that make a lot more difference, he says. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with our guest that we overuse these labels and in thinking that they actually describe things? Or do you think there's something to it, that there is something significantly different between millennials and Gen Xers and baby boomers and the silent or greatest generation and so on back to the dawn of time? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. To your calls now, Mike is with us in Janesville. Mike, hi.
Hey, just really quick, I was thinking that we don't challenge our teenagers or give them enough credit either. We don't challenge them enough or give them enough credit. And what I mean by that is, I've never done a study of it, but I wish someone would, about the great things teenagers have done. And I'm talking about, for instance, Thomas Edison, I know, ran a telegraph office at the age of 15. And I don't think we challenge them enough or give them enough responsibility to do that. We coddle, we make things too cushiony, and there's something to be said for responsibility and letting them do that, teaching responsibility from the parent side up. And through history, it'd be interesting to have a study done of ages of you know, back in the day, greatness that was achieved by teenagers.
Mike, thanks for the call. And John, Mike is kind of entering into a common complaint about younger generations that they're coddled. We don't give enough credit. We don't challenge them enough. Is this a common part of the story when people are talking about whatever the current youngest generation is?
Well, it certainly has been for a long time, I think. I mean, of course, the concept of teenagers, I guess, was invented sometime around about the 1950s. Before that, that sort of gap wasn't really there, and that reflects things like universal completion of high school. So that was one way in which they the experience of turning from a child to an adult has changed, and that has affected the way we talk about younger generations. But there's certainly not much difference in the way guests just spoke about the children post-millennial, I guess, who are teenagers now, and how that was being talked about when my children were teenagers and before that.
Mike, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Anne in Madison. Anne, hi.
Hi. I wanted to read a meme that I saw on Facebook. It says, people born in the 50s have lived 7 decades, 2 centuries, and 2 millenniums. We had the best music, the fastest cars, drive-in theaters, soda fountains, and we are not even that old yet. We're just that cool.
And thanks for the call. So some baby boomer pride out there. What do you think? I mean, for fun cultural touchstones like that, is it okay to talk about generational differences, John?
Well, they certainly are, although they don't match very well with the demographic generation. So if you look at, say, rock and roll, I mean, most of the people actually made rock and roll were silent, in fact, born before 1945. Just old enough, I guess, to have the first mass audience, which was the younger boomers. So certainly, as a boomer myself, I certainly think it was the best music. But I suppose, of course, we didn't have the internet, so things change. But those experiences are still very different, as I say, for different groups within any given population.
Thanks for that call. John, I wanted to ask, I think a lot of times when I hear people comparing generational differences or talking about generations in the workforce, it seems like they're really focused on middle class, mostly college educated and mostly white members of that generation. Do you think, do you see that when you see people breaking down generational differences?
Yeah, and I mean, it's characteristic, I guess. I think possibly more so in the U.S. than elsewhere, that when, you know, when people talk about young people, the tiny fraction who attend Adelaide University seem to get a huge amount of attention. That's and, of course, an important point there is you've already eliminated typically most, you know, by definition, class when you're talking about middle-class people. You've stripped out a lot of the racial diversity, and a lot of the time, implicitly, the assumption is we're talking about men rather than women.
Talking to John Quiggin from the University of Queensland in Australia, he is making the case that generational labels, millennial, Gen X, baby boomer, whatever, doesn't really explain that much about how people behave. And there are other differences between people that explain a lot more. Back to your calls now. Anissa is with us in Appleton. Hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
Oh, yes. So I am technically a millennial, but a lot of times I don't feel like I fit the realm of the mindset that people, or the negative mindset, I should say, that people have on millennials, assuming that a lot of them, you know, want everything for nothing. I was born in 1986, and I can't quite relate with, you know, millennials that are graduating high school today or maybe starting out in their careers after college, just because I went to high school and we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have social media. And when I graduated college, it was during the recession. So I don't have the, quote, luxury that a lot of millennials, you know, seem to have nowadays, or to what other people say that they do, just because I don't feel like I fit into that realm of a millennial. There's just such a big age difference between myself and, you know, younger adults out there. So I guess that's my point. You can't really relate with all the people in your age bracket.
Anissa, thanks a lot for the call. And she makes an interesting point there, John. Even if we're not talking about, you know, an 18-year generation or whatever length of time we break it up, is there something to be said for studying age cohorts and saying the people who graduated college a couple of years before the Great Recession might have experienced the world differently than the people who graduated from high school or college a couple of years after it?
Yes, there's good evidence that entering the labour market during a recession has a significant impact on your life chances. But, of course, we're not talking about a full-scale generation. And, of course, you need to distinguish between the group entering the labour market after college and the people, you know, a few years younger than them who aren't going to college and also entering the labour market, you know, with no college, who, of course, have an even more significant disadvantage. So, yeah, it's certainly true that those life experiences around early adulthood can make a significant difference. It's more the attempt to erect this into a full-scale classification. And I suppose to bear in mind that, yeah, a lot of these differences nonetheless wash out by the time people are 30 or are trumped by, as I say, the longer and more enduring things of class and race and gender.
And Anissa also mentioned technological differences. Is it of interest to you to look at, you know, the differences between people who grew up pre and post computers, pre and post internet, common cell phones, that sort of thing?
Well, again, those things are experienced. Yeah, that kind of argument's been made certainly when it was the baby boomers, it was television, and one thing you see is I see looking at this literature is there doesn't seem to be. Television is a radically different technology from the internet, for example. I mean, they both use screens, but one is a broadcast mass medium and the other one a much more interactive one. And yet a lot of the discussions you see about the impact of those technologies on the generations who came of age when they were new, they seem to be quite similar. And, of course, these days everybody uses the internet. I mean, it's obviously somewhat different never having experienced the period without the internet, but by now I think it's hard for most of us to really remember what that was like.
A weird from Lori on Facebook, who says labels are only used when you're looking for someone to blame. And Linda on Facebook says it's just another way to divide people. So what do you think of what Lori and Linda said? They see these millennial or generational labels being used to create division.
Well, certainly, I think, I mean, obviously, if there are real differences, you have to be aware of those differences. I mean, there's no point in pretending that some of the factors I've mentioned aren't. But I think generational labels really create division where none really exists.
We'll leave it there for now. John, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've been talking to John Quiggin. He's a senior research fellow in economics at the University of Queensland in Australia. He blogs at crookedtimber.org, and he joined us to talk about his recent piece for the New York Times headlined Millennial Means Nothing. He's making the case that generational labels are overused and they underexplain differences from one group of people to another. Still time for you to join the conversation. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page and let us know what you think. Do you see differences between millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers, significant differences, or do you see more differences within each of those groups? By age, as one of our callers mentioned, by income, by race, by where you live, urban, rural, that sort of thing. Again, share your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page.